For more than a century, the famed H.H. Richardson Complex off Forest Avenue was the home of what was then known as the Buffalo State Hospital. It was described as an urban asylum, caring for thousands of people suffering from mental illnesses. While today's Buffalo Psychiatric Center continues to operate in more modern buildings nearby, the Richardson Complex was abandoned and is currently undergoing a restoration. Its history is now detailed in a new book titled Buffalo State Hospital, A History of the Institution in Light and Shadow. It's published by the Museum of Disability History in Eggertsville. Museum Director Doug Farley and former patient Carl Schallhorn joined me to talk about the book. The story of the H.H. Richardson Complex is quite well known, but the stories of what went on behind the doors of that building, those stories are not. Is this why you decided to do this book?
Yeah, I completely agree. The stories just need to be told. For years and years, people have driven by that or have seen it or have heard stories, but they really didn't know what was going on inside the walls there. And they didn't really understand what was being accomplished and what the good work that was being done. You hear the stories of things that maybe weren't so good, but there was a lot of good work that happened there, and that's one of the stories we wanted to make sure was told.
Describe some of the good work.
Thousands of people were residents at the Buffalo Psychiatric Center in its heyday when over the course of 100 years, it served to treat mental illness in Western New York. And thousands of people went there, and many of them received adequate treatment to go back and be productive members of society.
Of course, we hear some of the horror stories, but at the time, we didn't know. We thought lobotomies were a good treatment. Turns out it was not, but those are the stories we tend to hear, don't we?
Yes, we do. We're looking at it through rose-colored glasses today, through the lens of the 21st century, when we have all of these things that have been devised and invented to help with mental illness, but those weren't around. It was kind of a proving ground for treating mental illness, and there really weren't any surefire ways or things that could be done, so they just were trying a combination of things, hoping that something would work. Today it seems kind of barbaric, but in those days they did what they thought was best.
And today, treatment mostly centers around medication and counseling?
Yes. The introduction of the psychotropic drugs in the late 60s and early 70s really changed the way that mental illness was treated, which helped to create the situation where the institutions could eventually be shut down and people could receive treatment right in the community.
Carl, why did you decide, because it took some courage, why did you decide to publicly share your story?
Well, honestly, it goes down to the fact that I've been living with bipolar disorder since 1981 when I had my first episode. And over the course of many years, I kept my story quiet. I kept it to myself. Of course, my family and a few friends knew. But eventually, I began to think about why don't we hear more positive stories in the media about mental health and mental illness. So I made the decision to write a piece for the Buffalo News. It ended up in the My View op-ed section. And in a way, it was kind of like coming out, so to speak, publicly. And I didn't realize that it would make such a big impact, but that's where it all began with me. And then it kind of took over from there.
How did you end up at the Buffalo Psychiatric Center?
Well, my two stays at the Buffalo Psychiatric Center were preceded by stays at Buffalo General Hospital when it had its community mental health center at 80 Goodrich. So I had been a psychiatric patient before then, so I had a history, as they say, with mental illness. But what happened was it became to the point where I needed more higher level of treatment. So that's why I was admitted to the psych center. And then during that time, I received more intensive therapy. I went through ECT, which is electroconvulsive therapy, as well as finally getting my bipolar diagnosis, because I didn't have that at first. So that was where I eventually got that diagnosis of bipolar, and the change began to happen.
ECT, is that what is commonly known as shock therapy?
Correct. And that's been around for a while, and it's still currently used today.
And how is it? How did it work for you? And any long-term effects? Did it help?
It absolutely did help. You know, in fact, I only had a series of six. You know, some people have to have more recurring treatments. Some people may even use ECT as opposed to medication. But for me, it worked pretty effectively. Now, they do say that, you know, one of the side effects can be memory loss or so forth. And I think there may have been some of that then because, you know, some of those times were kind of foggy for me. But in the long run, I mean, I haven't had major problems with my memory or so forth like some other people have. But really, it's different for everybody, I think, in that case.
For people who have seen the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, their perception about life in an institution like the Buffalo Psychiatric Center is probably based on what they saw. Was that an accurate depiction?
Well, I'll put it this way. In my experience, now, I was at the psychiatric center in the early 1980s, and the setting itself was similar in that there were people there with varying levels of illness. And mind you, everyone there pretty much dealt with a severe persistent mental illness. And why I reference it being like the cuckoo's nest in the book was that that might be the impression someone might have gotten if they were to visit. Now, a number of the patients there did deal with chronic illnesses and frankly, could be, in fact, institutionalized, you know, for their lifetime. Others, however, you know, like myself, might have been there temporarily and then discharged. But the setting itself would be reminiscent of what you might have seen in the movie in terms of the different level of patients, but also the interactions. And one of the things I don't go into much in detail in the book, but there was a lot of interaction, obviously, between the patients, the staff. And, however, in terms of the treatment, I would not say that the treatment was like you saw in the movie or if you've seen the movie. In fact, I think the treatment was much better and, in fact, a lot more humane.
What was daily life like when you were there?
There were a number of activities. Obviously, when I first got there, for me at least, it was about stabilizing my condition. You know, a lot of it was done with medication and so forth. But there were things like occupational therapy. There were times we would go to the Butler Center, which is where they have a pool and a gym. So we would, you know, engage in those activities. They had a bowling alley there, which I remember going to. And that was one of my favorite things to do. But then we would also occasionally go on activities outside of there, little field trips. We would go to see a soccer game or to the Buffalo Convention Center for the outdoor show. So there were things that were done to help us remain active. And it wasn't like we were sitting there in that unit and not having anything to do. There were things for us to do.
By the time you arrived, the Richardson buildings themselves no longer provided patient care. They were administrative offices. Did you get to those buildings much? What do you remember of that iconic structure?
You know, it's funny that you asked that because I was there once. And the way that I was there was I previously, many years ago, had Dr. Huberto Prado, who worked at BPC. He was one of the administrators, and he was one of my first psychiatrists. And I remember going to his offices there for my counseling sessions. So this was back in the day when psychiatrists would not only prescribe medication, but they would use, you know, different talk therapies or, you know, counseling along with that medication. So I would go there and meet with him. And I remember going through those big doors, and it was quite imposing and almost intimidating to walk through. But that was my only experience with the Richardson Complex. But I do remember that, certainly.
I see from the book that you wanted to be a DJ.
Yeah. I actually ended up at Buffalo State College after I left BPC, and I worked at the Buffalo State radio station for several years at WBNY, and that was one way in which I kind of kept going and kept forward. I did have even episodes following my discharge from BPC where, even as a student at the college, I still had experiences of going to ECMC to, you know, get treatment. And then eventually, after a number of years, I graduated from the college and was able to stabilize and then eventually go on to do the work that I do now.
And what is that work?
I work as a director of community advocacy for the Mental Health Association of Erie County and Compeer Buffalo. I have a clinical background. I have a credential for addictions through the New York State, alcoholism and substance abuse credential. And I also have worked in mental health as well as addiction settings, you know, previously. So I do have that background. But more of the work I do now is in the area of education and anti-stigma work and health promotion, mental health promotion.
I'd like to talk about your anti-stigma work. Is there still a stigma about those who suffer from mental illness, or is it starting to ease as people become more enlightened now in the 21st century?
Well, I'd say to both those questions, yes.
Okay.
There's still a lot of stigma, absolutely. But it seems to be the tide changing. However, unfortunately, we hear about these tragedies that occur, you know, in our country and even around the world that involve individuals who are dealing with mental illness. And unfortunately, those overshadow much of the positive stories that we might know about. A number of people have been courageous, as you said before, or brave enough to talk about their stories. And not only we're talking about famous celebrities, but others who are, you know, just typical people, you know, who have jobs and who have families. And there's a lot of that work being done online. There are a lot of online forums and websites and blogs of people living with mental health conditions that are doing so successfully and maybe even struggling, but still share their experience more openly. So people are becoming more open about talking about mental health. And that's what we need to do more, is have a bigger conversation.
Doug, the book includes stories from former staff, too. Paul Shea, who started in 1967, said all of his memories are good. In fact, he said great. Was that true for most of the employees?
I think all the employees were realistic and said they admitted that they saw things that probably weren't the greatest situations. But for the most part, they said that the average patient there received excellent care, and most of the employees were very dedicated to the jobs they were doing. So by and large, all the comments that we received were very positive from the employees.
Now, this book is filled with photos of the deterioration at the Richardson Complex. So you're looking at these photos of old geriatric chairs and vacant beds that haven't been used in decades, the fortress-like exterior. You know, I get the feeling I'm left that this is a real eerie place.
Yes, I think the average person would agree with that assumption, that it's just doesn't seem to be a pleasant surrounding. But hopefully through the efforts of New York State and the Richardson Complex group, that they will do some restorations with the buildings, and there will be a renaissance again. Once again, the building can be adapted to have a new use and a new life, which will take away some of that stigma.
So what's the message you want to leave readers with?
Well, I hope they can get their hands on a copy of the book, because I think their lives will be better for having spent a few hours through the pages of this book, and understand better what mental health treatment was like in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, and begin to appreciate what we have happening today in terms of the proper treatment of mental illness, and hopefully break down some of the stereotypes that we mentioned here during the interviews, that people just had, there was this negative stigma. You just didn't talk about mental illness. It was almost a sign of bad blood in the family, so it was definitely something that was kept quiet. But today, it should be out in the open, because it deserves to have the public attention that it needs. It's just another part of life. Sometimes we have a cold. Sometimes we have a mental illness.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.